Hey, are you there, everybody?
Yeah.
Hey, awesome. Now we're gonna find out who can play. This is my my this is like the Chia Pet of P1 clubs. You guys missed out. Did you have anybody at the Humans Being More in Spokane this weekend?
I did not.
Oh.
I had a group of people that was supposed to go actually, and they just started dropping like flies. So I was very disappointed.
Oh, well then maybe part of our call should be talking about urgency and how to create that, huh?
Okay, let's do that. I'm up for it.
Okay.
I had a little bit of a problem getting on the call. I don't know if anybody else is going to, but I tried about 4 times before I just got through.
Not that again.
It was
we get that ghost every now and then, so it's about time for me to switch over to the free one because these guys are just muffing it.
Yeah.
Because
I talked to Linda just a little bit ago, and I know that she's probably trying right now because she should have been on before me.
Does anybody else make it so far? Say howdy. That could be why we had such low numbers on the last call, too.
Yeah, it was tough getting in. I think I was lucky.
Can you hear a sucking in. Sound?
Is this the conference call, people?
It must be. Have you noticed how I'm trying to teach you all to speak metaphorically?
Hey, we're picking it up anyway. We're understanding you better.
You're much more colorful conversationalist, right?
Yes. Nobody understands what I'm saying, but they all enjoy me.
Now you know what my world is completely like.
He's just happy all the time.
What language is that guy speaking?
Oh, it's funny.
I remember how frustrating it was for me when I would have all these ahas, especially when I was sitting in physical therapy school.
Uh-huh.
And I would raise my hand, and I would just absolutely pontificate on some question.
Uh-huh.
I'd just cut it loose, and everybody would look at each other like, what did he say?
Did your instructor get it anyway?
Usually not. Sometimes we did, but I think I was up for stoning on a regular basis.
Oh, see, Linda's calling me on my other line. I bet she can't get through. Okay. Just a sec, I'll be right back.
All right.
Are we all there then, Linda? Linda? No, I tried the three-way. She's...
Oh, you know what you have to do is you have to call her, and she can't call you.
So try that. I hate. Okay.
You, yeah. Just do your whatever you call that flash, and then.
Do my flash inside a conference. I do it all the time on here, but hang on just a second. All right, I'll try that. Hang on a second. Yeah, she's having trouble.
Who made it?
Peggy.
Peggy, did you have trouble getting in?
Yes, I did.
Way to go. You stepped through the whole
thing. I got a busy signal.
Yep. Okay, Linda's on now. We're three way.
Okay, we got Peggy too.
Woo, Peggy!
Were you all getting busy signal as well?
Yep.
Too weird.
Maybe
well, welcome.
Down or something somewhere.
I'm glad that you were all survivors and made it through the enemy lines here.
Nice.
Well, let's just go on as if the three of you were prudent and poignant, and you're going to make her. So let's check with Peggy. How was your week this week?
Pretty good. I had a day today I was really excited about, and the gal's son ended up being sick today. So that
okay.
was kind of disappointing.
Were you complete or incomplete?
Complete.
Okay, awesome. And Linda?
I am incomplete this week, sorry to say.
And Sherry?
I am also incomplete. Not by much, but I am incomplete.
Okay. Well, let's first off, I want to review, because I always get too into it. Was there anything in the reading or listening that jumped out to you?
The reading was interesting.
Yeah,
I think I got it, though.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're all talking about chapter 11, huh?
Yeah. I think, too, but it just kind of... I think it could have been said a lot in a lot shorter time, and it was, I don't know.
It was long.
It was.
Well, here was my take on the whole, after I read the whole, and Jerry, I'm sure you know, we're talking about the mystery of sex transmutation.
Yep. I see what your perspective is on this.
Well, here's what I got, is that, and I was trying to understand the whole, like, halfway through, I'm thinking, but how? I don't get it. But I remember a tape, actually, it was a cassette, that, who was on it? It was, I just lost him. He's on the Diamond Training CDs.
Dave Solstice, yeah.
Yes. He had a tape out, and I think it could have been in, like, New Orleans or something that he was talking. And anyway, he talked about how to do your business in 15 minutes a day. And he said, he was talking about how many calls to break it down and stuff like that. But the key was to be absolutely and totally, completely in love with these 15 minutes. And he said, this 15 minutes where you're making your calls should be, and he tried to get you in a state where, he said, remember that first love that you had and you couldn't wait to see him, and that's all you could think about, and you had all these feelings and this energy and all of this stuff. He said, that's how you have to be when you're making these calls. What?
I think that the subject is too much for Peggy.
She's going to get drink water. She's going to have a cigarette.
What was that? I didn't get that. Dave and Rhonda just called in, and I'm clicking over to three-way them in.
Okay.
He called just to say, are you in? What's going on?
Okay.
So, I don't know if you can hear. I grabbed my phone real quick and noticed it was him.
Well, we heard a lot of beep, up, beep, op, and we just thought the subject matter was a bit much for you to handle.
That's kind of how we talk, isn't it, Linda, our group?
Yes.
Well, so I'm meeting and calling over to him, so.
Okay. So, anyway, so what I got at the end of this chapter, that's the first thing that came to my mind, was that tape, when he was talking about just being in love with this 15 minutes of your calling and your business, that you should put that kind of energy behind it. And I think that that's what they're talking about this mutation of that kind of energy.
That's
anywhere close?
That's very insightful. But
you'll
get other people's opinions just because we'll see if mass confusion can lead to a general consensus.
Okay. Well, I'm interested. That's my 2 cents right there. About my 10 cents or something.
I think it's because the mind is the powerful thing, and the way they described, you know, different people and how they would just close their eyes and, you know, wait for the energy and the thoughts to come to them, you know, and that's how they got their, you know, their greatest thoughts. Their I just thought, okay, it's like being in the middle of the night and sleeping and waking up. It's totally quiet. It's dark. You can think, you know, because your body's resting and your mind keeps going, and all these thoughts come to you, and you better have a pad and pencil, you know, next to your bedside, and be able to jot down these ideas, because some of the best ones come, you know, when it's that time, the greatest ideas.
Oh my goodness!
So I'm kind of related to that.
You're getting into a wonderful area of pontification, and I must take care not to get too excited to wander into this area. But there's some really amazing things that we can talk about.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Is this Peggy?
David Ron,
on
now.
A three-way call.
Oh, man, you guys get absolutely extra effort points for getting in through a team member. Were you complete or incomplete?
We're complete plus three.
Woo-hoo! Awesome.
Is there any wonder why this is our graduate team? Well, we've got this really, really, really interesting discussion going on. But while we're at it, let's take a moment for a reflection. And I want to get perspective from Rhonda. And Rhonda just got back from her first experience with Humans Being More training.
Oh, yay.
Oh, you went. That's awesome.
So, Rhonda, are you available?
Yes, I'm here.
Give us a little bit of a play-by-play. When you first got there, did you think, oh my goodness, this is going to be great?
No, I thought, oh my goodness, what is this? But then after I left, after it was over, I thought, that was great. That
yeah, we actually had two people walk out in the first exercise. And our British guy almost did.
Why was that?
I didn't know that.
And what do you think, Rhonda, about that first exercise?
Well, my mind's a blank. What was
that was the mirroring one. It was the icebreaker, but it was the mirroring deal where you basically your partner would make a movement and you needed to mirror that person's movement.
Oh yeah. That was embarrassing.
So why would they start with that if they knew that it was going to be embarrassing?
Oh, kind of break the ice. So if you were gonna walk out you could get your hand, I guess.
It was one of the most difficult that many had to deal with. So let's look at that from a standpoint of you all being leaders, and you send somebody to a course, and they're on the verge of walking out right at the very first bell. What would you do?
Give encouragement.
Oh, yeah, stick with it.
Yep. Second it.
It's a new experience. Go for it.
What would you explain if you were in that situation? And okay. Rhonda, you felt that embarrassment. How would you explain it to one of your people now that you've been through it? Was there a purpose for that? Even if there wasn't, here's something to remember as being a leader. And Rick Murphy talks about this when you become a P2. That if you're the captain of the ship, and the ship is starting to sink, and if the ensign comes up in, with panic in his eyes and says, "Captain, the ship is sinking." And you don't know what to do. You have to know what to do.
Yeah.
You don't have the luxury of not knowing what to do. Because the lives of everybody are at stake in your position. So even if you don't understand, you got to fake it real good.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that person needs to think that you're the leader in control. Well, what was interesting was that the mother and daughter that were signed up for it had not been in Nican more than a couple of days, and the daughter wasn't even in yet.
Oh, wow.
They walked into this class, and all of a sudden they had to mirror what other people were doing. And then they turned on music, and if your partner was a maniac and started dancing, here you are pretending like everybody's on an elevator because you haven't met yet, and you have to dance in public with a stranger and look like a fool. Can you see how it would be disarming to some people?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it would.
And somewhat alarming to some people. So I took those two gals, or I caught them heading out the door. I sat down with them, they're going, "I haven't got any idea what we just got into, but I'm sure glad we got out of it."
Wow. What did you say to them?
I said, "Well, the reason that you go through these sorts of things is it's like a pretest when you go to school. You ever take one of those?"
Mm-hmm.
You say, "Okay, we're in pre-algebra. We're going to take a pretest just to find out how much you know so that we can skip those points if you really, if we get to them, because this guy's already got it banged out. We don't need to cover it." What the teacher's really doing is to show you that you've never seen any of this before. So you start taking this test and it freaks you out. Will you pay more attention during class?
Oh,
yeah. That's good.
So in this case, what we're saying is, and I told him, I said, if your life is not headed in the direction that you want it to go, if your financial life, if your physical life is not headed where you want it to go, you're going to have to change, and you're going to have to change in ways that you've set up and harbored for all of your life. And there may be some pretty significant trauma to break you loose from that. Do you want to change? Sometimes we have to just make that point right out of the bat so you can say, am I really at a point where I want to improve and change and I'll stand through it? Because if you do and you bust through that, here's what happens. And then I went through explaining how we use group dynamics, pulling together as a team, becoming aware of the network and the strength and power of the use of each other's strength. And the only way you're going to be really inclined to work with other people is to know that they can handle duress just like you. Then you'll stand shoulder to shoulder. By the time this thing is over, they'll be some of the closest people you'll ever have met in your lifetime. You will now have, for the first time, the ability and the stamina and the toughness to break out of what you've been conditioned for your whole life to believe.
What did they say? Did they stay?
I said, "I'm going to leave you with absolutely your choice. The next 4 minutes, class comes back together again," because they were on break, "and you can come back together," and they did not.
Wow.
And so their sponsor just called me today and said she got in there and she didn't know why, but she freaked out, and there was something. What did he tell me it was? Something. Something. I wish I could remember. But it just flipped her switch and she freaked out. But he said when she got home, she pulled out every tape that he'd ever given her and re-listened to them.
Oh, wow.
She looked up on the internet what the compensation plan was, because her big deal was she wanted to make money and that's why she was signing up.
Uh-huh.
And he said, she called me back today and said, I'll actually refund all your own money personally if you feel like that's what you want to do. And she said, no way. What I want to do is I'm absolutely fascinated by this company and what they're doing, and I've checked all these things out. I want to rock with this.
Wow. Wow.
Dave, is that how you handle the guys on the construction site?
No, not really. They want to be there or they don't.
Yeah, so in this case, we're dealing with a volunteer army, and it's a very different thing, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little more difficult to work with people in a volunteer army. Okay, so all that being said, it was a win all the way around. So, Rhonda, what were some of the things that were, do you think, are useful from that, that your people can gain benefit from in the future as they go and be a part of it?
Well, there's a lot of personal growth there, at least. A lot of self-examination. Goal setting. I haven't been a goal setter, and it's all new to me. Really good. Lots to learn.
Was it surprising to you that a company like this would offer a course like that?
Yes. The whole thing was not what I expected. It's what I needed.
Oh, boy, is that a good statement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Peggy, why would somebody say that?
Because the whole course helps you examine yourself and the reason that you're doing what you're doing. And like she said, she wasn't a goal setter. We talked about that on our team meeting and on our call. And it really helps you focus on how important the goals are.
Actually, this was a much less, and Rhonda, this might be a surprise to you, this was a much less emotional presentation than many of the Supreme War trainings.
It was?
Yeah. As a result, the group was not quite as coalesced as some get, because they didn't seem to have the depth of emotion and the connectedness with the presenter or the other people outside their small groups. That was interesting for me to watch. It just was interesting. But one thing that did occur, and you've already mentioned it, was I've never been to one, and they're all very similar, but there's a different style on each one of the presenters. And that was that it was designed from beginning to end and logically followed a pattern on how goals are set, why they are made, and what are the steps in processing and developing goals if you've never really thought about what those steps are. Did you pick that up, Rhonda?
Yes, I really appreciated that part of, like I said, I wasn't a goal setter, and just took you through step by step of how to do that.
And wasn't it interesting, because I'm the same way, I'm not a goal setter in the Ken, or wasn't. But wasn't it interesting how it was like you just shake the jar and what falls out is what you were looking for. So he would have us write out various steps and different things that were meaningful or values or that sort of thing. And then he would say, okay, now let's take the 80-20 rule and pick the one out of that group that really represents what you intended to say or can get all the rest of it done within that one.
Yeah.
And so where a person who has difficulty defining what they're shooting at, you go through this step, boom, you shake it, and it falls right out. And there it sits, and you go, wow, my purpose or my mission statement. So I really found that to be completely fascinating, because it was using the same structure and format that all the others had used, but he stayed on track and meticulously followed the idea of we're in this process to learn the nuts and bolts of how to set your priorities and precedents for the future. And I thought that was really cool. On the other hand, it was a far less emotional event than some that we've seen before. Did any of the others of you have an emotional meeting when you went?
Very.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Rhonda, could you see that, because you made a very profound statement, and that was that it was what you needed. Who here has been more than once?
I have.
How many times?
Twice.
This is my fourth as a participant, and my seventh as, the three times I was assisted in facilitating of it. And this was the first time that I finally broke through and was done with some of those exercises where you really have to face things. I was done.
Wow.
And rather than, and it was really interesting because the other times just felt like, yeah, okay, I'm addressing these issues, but it was totally done. And there was a sense as I went through this in the fourth time that now that I'm done, then I don't dwell on any of that stuff. We look to the future and what are we going to have to do? Let's get on board and rock and roll. Now, everybody comes to this at different places in their lives. Some people, that first exposure just pops them all the way to blowing through. And for others, it's only just beginning to open up old wounds or whatever and prepare the ground for you to make changes. Then you go out and you bang away at your Nican world for a little bit and you come back to another one. Then you hit it again and you try to set some things in order and you go out and you're not quite ready yet, so you bang around and then you come back and do it again. And after the fourth one, for me, or what was really surprising to me was as I stood up ready to go with all this stuff, I was absolutely separate from any self-consciousness. I was involved in each of the activities, but didn't feel any self-consciousness at all. I was like an ethereal observer, where I felt like I could see people struggling, and I could see that it would be, if there was a breakthrough for them, it was less than an inch away for them to completely change everything about their Nican future.
Wow.
But I could see them almost like they were struggling against a Kevlar bag that was holding them in place, and they couldn't break to just step that inch and break through it. And for many of them, they just had their back turned to it. It was as if they were standing with their back turned to the line that marked freedom, with their hands over their ears and yelling, "You don't understand, you don't understand, you don't understand how bad my situation is." And I could see with great compassion for the first time, oh, if you could only know that you just need to turn and step, and you'd be completely done.
Wow.
And it was such a benevolent feeling. It was almost a parental feeling of watching these people, and there was great hope in it because I could see that the eggs are ready to hatch for the new generation that's going to explode Nican. But they're all laboring, trying to break the shell and just come out into the reality of what their potential is. Is that all too freaky for everybody?
No, that's really cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I got this. There was one person in our my little small group, and Rhonda, I want to see if you had any perspectives. Well, let's check with that. Were there people in your group where you began to see that they were actually their own stumbling block to any success?
Yes.
And did you see any growth in them during the course of that weekend? Or did you feel like some of them just, they might have, okay, that's their first salvo, but nowhere near breaking through?
No, I've seen, in one in particular, I've seen a big breakthrough, yeah.
So we want our people, if we look back at our little flip chart, and it says what we want to do is to get right ourselves. Let's say all of the society we're around is just caught, fallen in the river, heading for the waterfall, and swirling and can't catch on to anything, and everybody's just sort of a mass going down the river. It makes sense that if one person can get their footing and climb up and get stable on a rock with a branch to hold on to and something they can hand out to other people, because that person became stable, they now can pull someone else out. And then once that person's out, they've got to first get their footing, and they've got to first get themselves all set, stable, and ready to go to pull someone else out. The leadership of what we're doing in NECAN for the future is you. And we are going through the process of grabbing you out of that river, setting your feet planted firmly, getting your orientation so you can turn around and help somebody else get to that point of freedom. But what was so interesting to me, and I explained this to my group just before we left, I imagined that if there was $600 million that would be paid to our group, if each one of us would just pick up 10 bricks and lay them in a straight line to make a wall, and that's all that was required to get the $600 million. We could break it up evenly, but every member of the group had to do their 10 bricks. What I saw was somebody saying, "But you don't understand, I stubbed my toe last week."
Oh, wow.
Someone else was saying, "No, but no, don't, you can't ask me to do that right now, because in my fourth grade English class, as I stood up in front of the class, I really didn't feel like I had the answers, and I felt so embarrassed, so I can't put my bricks on the pile." And another person was saying, but you don't understand, in my situation, I never learned how to read, so I can't put bricks on the pile. And their excuses looked that ludicrous to me.
Wow.
And so because of all that, it looked like if we were to describe what we need to do to get all of you free, I've been way too soft on most of the people that I bring in. How many of you have listened to the Danny Johnson tapes?
Yep.
Yes.
There were two sets of Danny Johnson tapes. There was the one where she was going through her scripts, and there were seven CDs. Anybody have that one?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Did
anybody listen to the one that was live from North Carolina, and there were 10 CDs?
Was that North Carolina?
I don't know.
Well, here's what you'll recognize if I bring up the story. I mean,
okay.
It was profound to me. She might have stated some of this in set of seven, that she wanted to have a mentor. So a young guy came in, wasn't any much older than her, and he had been in the business 6 months longer than her, and was making $25,000 a month, and she was making nothing, not a zip, nothing. And she just said, "No, look, this is not right. I can do what he can do. I'm going to ask him, will he let me follow him around?" And he said, "Sure." And so they told that story. But what she mentioned in the one tape that was so profound to me, she worked with that guy, and he humiliated her. And the way he did that was he gave her a script and said, "Here's some leads, call them." And she called the first person and just blew it. Just blew it big time. And she's sitting around with a room of guys. They were all making phone calls to these prospects. And he said to her, "You suck."
Oh,
and so she's one of those fighters, you know?
Oh, yeah.
She's a hot blood. So she said she grabbed her briefcase and she was heading out of there, and he goes, so that's what it takes to make you quit, huh?
Oh, wow.
And she said, no, I'm going to the bathroom. With your briefcase. And she said, I'm a girl, I have things in here. So she went to the bathroom. She came back out, and now she had the resolve that she would never quit.
Wow.
Then she said, he introduced her to his mentor, and she was able to hang with this guy, and then she was excited. This was a guy that was making $1 million a month.
Wow.
And so she wanted to really learn from him. He said, here's the rules. You will not, under any circumstances, have an opinion. And she didn't think much about that. And so they got started and something. And she said, I have an idea. And he smacked the table. It stood up and nearly broke the table. And he pointed his finger right in her face and said, shut up. He said, if I listen to you, how much money do you make? And she said, nothing. And he says, how much do I make? $1 million a month. He said, if I listen to you and modify what I do based on what you're about to say, we both lose.
Oh, wow.
You have no opinions. You will either do what's necessary or you will not.
Now we know where that comes from. Wow. Her.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And she said, then I began to very quickly understand that unless I had that kind of tough, I would never make it to the point that I needed to make it to. And then she made $1 million in her next year.
Wow.
So
I hadn't heard that.
In the urgency that we establish, we have to see something clearly. And if you can't see it for yourself, if it's not absolutely there for making a living, you're going to have to hang with somebody that's got it. And there are very few people that really get it, but you can have hundreds of people in the process of development that will be able to use that vision, hundreds or thousands. And many of them will actually become millionaires in the process. But the primary visionary that really has all of that, they're going to blow it to the moon. And they will be multi-millionaires. Can you all see that point?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the primary visionary that you all have heard? That you know when you listen to him, you say, that's a person who's going to blow this completely out of the ballpark.
Well, you hear Rick Murphy, you know, he's that kind of guy. Jeff Van Blerkum.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of guy. I mean, there's a lot of them in the can. There's a ton of them.
And some of them are absolute maniacs, like that guy that slapped the table. But who's the highest paid person in the can?
Dave.
His personality.
He won't slap the table.
He won't slap the table, will he?
No. Mm-mm.
But what Dave absolutely does not allow, under any circumstance, is for somebody to get him off of his track.
Yeah, yeah.
And no matter what idea you might think you have, Dave's maybe the type like Terry Latham that says, sometimes you got to let your teenagers run and burn their hands in the fire a few times. But you just keep telling the same story, and when they come back, if you're still doing what you were doing when they left, but you've got more money than they do, then they'll listen to you. It's that absolute sense that you're in the right place, doing the right thing at the right time, and therein lies a really key magical ingredient